answer, cause I simply can't resist her. Looks like it's more than a fling. When I hung up the phone, I knew I better be gone when the sheriff showed up this time. So I fired up my truck, and with a little bit of luck, I'd make it to the county line. Yeah, I'm a one step ahead and running for my life. Go before the county line. Now the crooked county sheriff got a badge and a gun. He's bigger than me and mean as they come. He's riding around in a brand new ride, another backseat rider just a up and won't seem nearer. I plan on staying alive. Gonna burn me some diesel and lose that old weasel like a bootlegger running a show. So I cinched down my load and took her off road. Now I'm headed for the county line. Yeah, I'm a one step ahead and running for my life. Two step dancing with another man's wife. A foot on the floor. Go before the county line. Now you might be inclined to think the worst of me. Hell, if I had enough time, I'd probably agree. But one thing I know, and I will never budge, he's got a handful of stones and he better not judge. His lady seen him gawking at the college girls who walk him. Now she's riding with me. We spent the whole night talking, and we're gonna be a walking down the Iowa street. Yeah, she's my shotgun rider, and nothing could be finer. I can't believe that she's mine. Now we're shifting gear as we disappear. We're headed for the county. Go before the county line. Oh, Lordy, mama, foot on the floor, hear the engine whine. Last spot, go before the county line.
That was John Denny and Crooked County Two-Step. You are tuned into the Whiskey and Cigarettes Show in the company of your Cabacus Never, Remove the Rodeo, and the Italian DJ Nick. And my people, it's truly an honor and a pleasure to welcome the show today, the one, the only, John Denny. Hey, John, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, thanks, John. Of course, I want to thank you so, so much for taking your time out to be a guest on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, we've been definitely been looking forward to talking to you indeed. Now, we just heard this great song of yours, Crooked County Two-Step, taken from your latest album, Americana Dream. Now, when it comes to the origins of this song, how did it come about? Are there any stories behind it?
Well, sure. As a matter of fact, there are. I don't know if you've ever heard of Delbert McClinton
Or not.
Okay, well, his son and I are best friends. And Monty is a songwriter, and we both went down to the Texas Hill Country one weekend. We loaded up the car with beer and steaks, and we were going to spend the weekend writing songs. And by the time Monday rolled around, we hadn't written very many songs, really none to speak of, but we sure had a lot of beer and a lot of steaks. Well, on the way back home to the DFW Metroplex, a Kerr County Sheriff's car pulled in behind us, and we kind of straightened up and, you know, acted like we were innocent from doing anything. And then he turned on his lights and sped right around us. And man, I was thinking to myself, wow, that Kerr County Sheriff's going to run me in, you know? And I thought, okay, well, there's our hook. And so we started writing that song as we were driving home. And then, you know, sometimes when you write a song, you kind of paint yourself into a corner, especially when it's a ballad and there's a story behind it, as far as a way to end it. And couldn't figure out how to end it. And so I just kind of stuck it on the shelf for, oh gosh, almost 15 years. And I happened to be going through some music notes I'd made. And I went, oh yeah, what about this song? And I called Monty up and I said, hey, remember this? He goes, yeah. And I said, well, be thinking of about the final verse. And he called me in a couple of days and had it. And we just kind of strung it together and finished it up that way. But yeah, it was inspired by an almost true event.
Well, that's definitely a great story for sure. And when it actually comes, you know, to your latest offering, Americana Dream, what are people getting with this latest opus of yours?
Well, they're going to get probably three songs that are straight ahead country. Well, I say straight ahead country. Vucare Marie is kind of a New Orleans flavored country song. Then there is this one, Crooked County Two-Step. There'll be another one called Day Drinking. It's one of those tear in the beer kind of you know, somebody done me wrong songs. It's a country song. And then the rest are more of a kind of a roadhouse feel, like my previous work. So there'll be, right now, we're looking at 11 songs that we're going to include on it. And that may be whittled down to at a minimum of 9, but we'll have to see. And there'll be something for everybody on it. There'll be some Americana things, some ballads, some very emotionally charged ones, and, you know, a few messages here and there.
Fantastic stuff. Well, definitely sounds like a very versatile album indeed. And, you know, looking at the title of it, what do you mean by the term Americana Dream?
Oh, you went there, didn't you?
I had to.
Well... Yeah. I don't know what your audience is like, but you certainly probably have been watching the news in America.
Sure.
And things have changed here in America over the years. You know, we have kids dying in schools at the hands of shooters, and you know, what I consider a failing healthcare system. It's better than it was now. And so the middle class has a very difficult time of remaining middle class. Achieving the American dream is much more difficult than it ever was. And so there'll be some songs that kind of reference that. Some people have called me an activist. I don't really think of myself as an activist in the sense that Jackson Brown or Bonnie Raitt are, although there have been a magazine or two that referred to me in those terms. You know, when I see an injustice done against poor people or against people who are marginalized, you know, I feel compelled to sing about it. And just to call people's attention to it.
Well, you know what? More power to you for doing that, because, you know, one, I have seen criticism over the course of the years when it comes to country music and the lyrical content of country music as it being, you know, almost very banal and very repetitive. You know, we had the bro country movement for a long time, and then we had the other stuff. And so it almost seemed like country music had kind of lost its voice, if you will, when it came of in important things to say or interesting thing to say. And I think of stuff like Loretta Lynn, when she was writing songs like that, came up with songs like The Pill, for example, that really revolutionized, right, and made a statement. And we just seem to have lost that. And so I'm glad there are folks like yourself, you know, doing stuff like this. And as a follow-up question to that, you know, you mentioned the American dream. And of course, you know, I, obviously not being American, but having seen the American dream depicted throughout movies and plays and what have you, you know, the whole concept of, you know, if you can make it in the States, you can make it anywhere. And it's the land of equality and of opportunity and all this kind of thing. In your mind, what does the American dream look like today? Is it still what it used to be?
Well, you know, you still have the ideas of what it's supposed to be. You know, it should be affordable for any family to be able to buy a home. It should be affordable for anybody to buy, you know, their groceries. We have places in America that are described as food deserts, where communities live with no public transportation or far enough away from access to food that it's difficult for them. And so, you know, we have organizations that try to help alleviate hunger in America, but it is here. And it specifically strikes single women who are raising their children. Single women who are raising their children, you know, that work 3 and 4 jobs are often skipping meals so they can afford to feed their children. Now, this is not something that is, you know, I mean, a lot of people in America don't even realize it's going on, but it is. And so those are kind of the things that you know, should be available to everybody. And they're not. They used to be, but the opportunities for people to work for a company and retire from that company from the start of their careers and be paid a living wage just doesn't exist anymore. I'm hopeful that we'll return to that someday. A lot of people want to. Hopefully that'll happen. But before that happens, we're going to have to come together as a country and not be so divided, left against right, and realize that, you know, we are all in this together and try to pull together and kind of work things out.
I certainly agree. I think unity is very much the answer to a lot of this for sure. And going back, you know, to the, of course, the musical side of things and you know, what you do in music, there was a great quote that I saw of yours on your website, and I quote, "The music business has changed a great deal since I was a kid." Now, my question to you is, for better or for worse?
The answer to that is both, right? It's changed for the better in that it's a lot easier for songwriters and musicians to distribute their product, you know, and be heard, right? Unfortunately, there are some things that have happened in the music industry, though, that make it difficult for anybody to make any money with that. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I were to have 500,000 streams on the song Crooked County Two-Step, I would probably make enough money from my streaming royalties to be able to take you to breakfast. And that's it.
Wow.
You know, you're talking about hundreds of pennies mm-hmm. for each stream. That used to be the case back, you know, when people were buying records, you know, you used to get, you know, 3 cents, 4 cents, whatever, for a spin on a radio program. But you also had physical sales. Well, physical sales have pretty much gone away. So the only way that a musician or a songwriter can really make money these days is by playing concerts, which is good. But, you know, it's good if you're, you know, Don Henley of the Eagles, who can charge $400-$500 a ticket. But for people like me and other many, the vast majority of songwriters and musicians, we're not able to pull in that kind of money for our shows. But there's another revenue alternative for us called sync publishing, where when we produce a record or have some songs that are in the can. Occasionally, we have an opportunity to have some of those placed in movies or video games or television shows or whatever. Those royalties are a lot easier to come by these days and pay fairly well. They're easier to come by if you know what you're doing, I guess, is the better way of saying it. But so it's changed for the better and for the worse. And, you know, large corporations and record companies have always been the robber barons of music, and they still are, you know.
This is very true. I guess in certain aspects, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And you know, you mentioned the fact of, you know, I guess physical music within and in physical media has kind of disappeared. But on the other side, we have seen a surprising uptick when it comes to vinyl. And I was actually wondering, when it comes to you, have you thought about possibly offering your listeners and your fans your music on vinyl?
Well, sure. And there's another thing that large record companies have done. When they realized that vinyl sales were increasing, they went and grabbed all their old catalog, their back catalog, and say, hey, let's just release this and some alternate takes and just flooded the market with more vinyl. Vinyl is very expensive to produce. And so many artists can't afford it, but right. Yeah, there will be a short run of vinyl for this particular album coming out. And by the way, we were thinking about releasing the album in June. I think we're going to push that back to much later in the summer, just because of pre-sales orders and things like that. And we were trying to get it to time with the Americana Festival in Nashville for this year, which is in September.
Well, that's definitely smart marketing right there, John. Very, very smart indeed. And, you know, and speaking of, you know, your taste in music, which would you say is your favorite musical decade?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, it really depends on the genre. I think for rock and roll, it'd have to be the 60s and 70s, you know. For country music, it would have to be the 60s. You know, in the 70s, although there are always great things coming out of the country music field with any decade. But let me just provide a caveat with that. What's been coming out of Nashville for the last 10, 20 years is nothing better than swill. You know, it's really bad stuff. That, don't get me wrong, there are people like me, a lot of people who are doing very well with good stuff, like Jason Isbell. Man, what a writer he is. Agreed. You know? Yeah. And there are others too, but then you've got road country. You've got what I call hick hop, where people are, you know, country artists are appropriating, you know, hip hop rhythms and, you know, trying to come up with an amalgam of music that doesn't really work for either direction, to appeal to young, very young female audiences and young, well, just, you know, teenagers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 60s and 70s for both rock and roll and country. And this is not all a be all end all, because obviously there are great songs and great albums that come out in every decade. But I think for the most part, you'd have to say that those decades were known for groundbreaking music for both of those genres, right?
I was just saying I definitely agree with you when it comes to that. Yeah, because those were magical years. It always makes me think of my father whenever I kind of bring him new music, and he says, you guys did, your generation didn't invent anything. We all invented it way back in the 60s and 70s. I'm like, fair enough.
Oh, it's true. It's absolutely true, you know, and I have Whenever I work with other musicians who work with me and for me, they're usually much younger than I am. And they look at things like punk and new wave music and as something that was long after my era, you know. And I'm like, you don't understand, that came about with Iggy Pop and my generation, you know. It's very difficult for people to really realize, you know, that the influence that those decades have. But then if you really want to know, if you want to dive into the whole academic pursuit of musicology, then you've got to look at blues music, mm-hmm. and then take that all the way back to music from the fields of sharecroppers and even slaves. And, you know, it all began there. And you know, there's a guy named Alan Lomax, who was a musicologist that went around the United States back in the 30s and 40s, recording people working on sharecropping farms, and as they were writing music and playing handmade instruments. He's the one that introduced England to Muddy Waters and brought all those records over in the late 50s and 60s. And in a way, you know, it has been said that he is as much responsible for the British invasion of America with blues-oriented music, which most of it was, as anybody, you know. And so there's a huge connection. There is always a huge connection with African-American culture and important swings in art in America, whether it's dance or music or, you know, you name it. I mean, there's a lot of influence comes from that community.
Oh, very much so indeed. And, you know, also when you were mentioning, you know, should we say old time rock and roll in inverted commas, it made me think, of course, of a movie that kind of set the world on fire recently, the latest musical biopic, which was Elvis. And I was kind of wondering, how do you feel about these biopics? I mean, are you a fan of them, or do you think that maybe they shouldn't really be made, or what's your opinion on those?
I think it depends. I mean, you can go back and look at the biopics that were made. The one, Coal Miner's Daughter, was just amazing, and it was accurate. The Elvis thing, I have not seen it, but some of the things that I've seen from it are not what I remember as being, you know, completely accurate. In fact, his stepbrother used to live in the Dallas Fort Worth Metroplex, and he was the one that actually found Elvis when he had passed away. And so we've talked before, you know, he and other people that I've gone to church with, you know, and so some of the, you know, a movie's got to sell tickets, right? It's got to put butts in seats, and it's got to get eyeballs on screens. And so they're not going to always tell the complete and accurate side of it if it is a little bit lackluster. And that kind of bothers me. But, you know, they can be interesting. I just my desire is that they would be as accurate as possible. The Johnny Cash one was a really good one. But you can go all the way back to, there was a biopic about Hank Williams. I think Warren Beatty was in that. There was a biopic about Tommy Dorsey. Jimmy Stewart played that role, I think, you know. So they go from, you know, they've been around for a long time. You know, and I think they have a great opportunity to educate people on what has gone before them, but it does no good to educate people if what they're portraying on the screen is not accurate. That's my opinion, my humble opinion.
Well, I very much agree with you. You know, to go on a brief tangent here, I'm still waiting for the proper Marilyn Monroe biopic, because all the ones that I've seen have never done her justice. And I find it was very upsetting that of all the ones we've had, great actors, great actresses, great directors, but nobody has actually sat down to tell the actual story, at least in my opinion. So I'm kind of still waiting for the right for Marilyn's story to be done right, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what a great story that would be if it was done accurately, you know, because, I mean, women at that point were really exploited and you know, were not in control of their own destiny. And so, yeah, there's a lot that could be told in that story. It'd be a good story to tell.
Oh, big time. And from the past to the present, I suppose, John, we, of course, are now in the early stages of 2023. You know, we're only roughly about coming into the fifth month of the year. Now, I was wondering, when it comes to you, what are the objectives you've set yourself for 2023 and you'd like to see realized by the time the year is over?
Oh, wow. You know, I have some goals for enlarging my fan base beyond the borders of Texas better than I have. And I've played quite a bit of shows outside of the state. However, the one thing that Texas has going for us as musicians is it's a large state. It's a very music-oriented state. And so you can build a tour just in Texas alone. I mean, you can do a full tour here in this state. And so it's easy to kind of rest on your laurels and say, you know, this fan base is good. But so I've set a goal for moving beyond the borders more than I have in the past. I'm going to start turning down some shows that are guarantee shows where the venue gives me a guarantee to appear. And then I go and the next thing I know, they're bringing in, you know, lots and lots of people. And I'm hoping to do more ticketed shows this year. And the other thing is I really think it's important to start releasing more and more music. Usually one album every 2 years is what I've been good for, or EPs every 2 years. I'm going to try to do one a year and maybe more than that if I can get around to it. But you know, there's some pretty tall orders there for me to try to fill. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're always happy for more John Denny music indeed. And for those who want to, you know, stay up to date with everything you have going on, be it gigs, be it new music and all this kind of stuff, where can we send folks to for more information about you?
Well, just go to johndenny.com. My last name is spelled DENNIE.com. Or go to my Facebook page, John Denny Music. You know, at John Denny Music is where you'll find me on Facebook. That's a great place to keep up with where I am. In fact, you know, anybody, if they want, they can IM me. And more than likely, I'll be the one that answers. You know, so if they have any questions. And then we're about to release this. We're about to start taking pre-release orders for the album, which means if people sign up for that pre-release, then, you know, I'm going to have some sort of gift or something to give them on the day of release. That is yet to come out of the gate. So if they are interested, it'd be a great idea for them to swing over to my website, hit me up with the email there, sign up, you know, give me their email so I can stay in touch with them and let them know. Honestly, that's probably the best way is to sign up and get on my email list, and I'll be sending out, you know, I don't spam people though. I send things out very rarely when it's important news.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, folks, you definitely know then what to do for more John Denny goodness. And speaking of John Denny goodness, John, we're going to be seeing you out here with another great song of yours from the upcoming Americana Dream album, which will be Vieux Carré Marie. Now, when it comes to this song, any stories behind this one?
Well, sure. Now, Vieux Carré is the French or the New Orleans French term for the French Quarter. It's another name for the French Quarter.
Right.
And, you know, the Cajun folks that live there in South Louisiana have a different English dialect and a way of speaking that is very unique. And the word Marie Claire would be pronounced Marie Claire from them. And this song is all about a young man from Lafayette, Louisiana, who found himself in New Orleans, and he was in love with a dancer. And, you know, and by dancer, you know, all that implies. And he's written a song for her. He wants her to hear it. And of course, he can't find her, you know. And so that's why her name is called Vieux Carré Marie, because she's Marie Claire that works and lives around the French Quarter in New Orleans. I lived in New Orleans for a little while. And so I love the music that comes out of that area, especially the Zydeco and Cajun music that comes from, you know, the even farther south Louisiana. It's good stuff.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and that, and I absolutely love this one myself, and I'm sure our listeners will too. So we're going to be into this great song. This will be John Denny and Vieux Carré Marie. John, I want to once again thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciated it, and of course, I want to wish you continued success with your career and all the very best for 2023.
Nick, thank you so much. I sure appreciate you having me on.
Well, the pleasure was certainly ours. One more people, you heard it from John Denny. Be sure to check him out if you have to do so. He is definitely worth your time. He has a new upcoming album, Americana Dream. Be sure to keep your eyes peeled for that. Here's another great song from it. This will be Vieux Carré Marie. You are tuned into the Whiskey and Cigarettes Show with your Italian DJ Nick. We'll be right back after this.
You're making me sweat the way you wear that dress. Came all the way from Lafayette to see you dance. Marie, baby, give me half a chance. Marie Claire, what is wrong with you? I waited all night long just to sing you the song. And baby, what you trying to do? Marie Claire, I do declare. Girl, you're cold as a stone. You cut me down to the bone. I'm turning, sleeping all alone. Oh yeah. Well, Marie, baby, tell me where you at. Loving you is giving me a heart attack. Somebody said to sing you near the Vieux Carré, dancing with a tourist till the break of day. Marie Claire, what is wrong with you? I waited all night long just to sing you the song. Down to the bone, and I'm a tossing and a turning, sleeping all alone. Well, Marie, baby, tell me where you at. You're sneaking round the quarter like a river. Somebody said to sing you near the river wall, holding hands with a Texan in a big old hat. Marie, baby, tell me where you at. Marie Claire, what is wrong with you? I waited all night long just to sing you the song. Baby, what you trying to do? Marie Claire,
you're cold as a stone. You cut me down to the bone, and I'm tossing and I'm turning, sleeping all alone. You're cold as a stone, you cut me down to the bone, and I'm tossing and I'm turning, sleeping all alone.